Hello and welcome to Right Through Now, the podcast that helps you stay connected with international news, science and technology, and fun stuff. Let's begin with fun stuff. New species of dinosaur is unearthed in Chile's Atacama Desert. Man, I am so fascinated by the Atacama Desert. It's wild. And I really, really want to go there one day. Let's hope this coronavirus shit dies down so that day might come. I mean, there's more important stuff happening in the world, but I'll wait. Scientists have identified a new species of dinosaur from parts of a skeleton found in northern Chile. The creature's remains were unearthed in the Atacama Desert, the world's driest, near the city of Copiapo. Experts say that the plant-eating titanosaur had a small head and long neck and an unusually flat back. Studies suggest that the creature lived in what would have then been a lush landscape of flowering plants, ferns, and palm trees. A team led by Chilean geologist Carlos Arvialo unearthed the remains in the 1990s and carried out the research in the 2000s. The findings, published in the journal Cretaceous Research, were made public on Monday. The remains, according to the team, included parts of the humerus, a femur, and the ischium, and vertebral elements of the neck and back. They represent a small sub-adult animal with an estimated length of 6.3 meters or 20 feet. Well, so much of this is a surprise to me because, I mean, I just really did not expect that there would be vegetarian dinosaurs. And the fact that they grew up to be so large is another thing that is just wild. The creature was a sauropod, or a long-necked, long-tailed plant-eating dinosaur. It was found in beds dating from the late Cretaceous, the last epoch before dinosaurs were wiped out 66 million years ago. What the article doesn't mention is that there was an astonishing light show just before they died. Maybe it was worth it. I mean, how the hell do we know? Okay, Russia says we'll leave the International Space Station and build our own. Yes, you heard that right. If you want to do it well, you should do it yourself, is what they say. Russia is ready to start building its own space station with the aim of launching it into orbit by 2030 if President Vladimir Putin gives the go-ahead, the head of the Roscosmos Space Agency has said. The project would end more than two decades of close cooperation with the US aboard the aging International Space Station. If in 2030, in accordance with our plans, we can put it into orbit, it will be a colossal breakthrough, Interfax News Agency quoted Roscosmos chief Dmitry Rogozin as saying. The will is there to take a new step in the world of manned space exploration. Don't you just love it how cool, you know, the developments in the space, this modern space age is occurring? So much fun stuff is happening. I think nearly every major country is participating in this, and it's kind of exciting. Although this specific news about Russia is more indicative of another simmering Cold War. I mean, at least that's what the memory suggests, because most of these incredible developments that the US did, that the Russians did, were as a direct consequence of the Cold War. And, you know, that was a major part of the entire space race. And all this stuff happening now, could there be a connection? Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but tensions are high. So maybe that's it. Maybe that's what the world needs to, you know, become an interplanetary species, at least the humans. Do you think, by the way, that if humans leave planet Earth to settle somewhere else, they'll take pets along? I think dogs will definitely make it. Cats, probably not such a good idea. I mean, cats can, you know, they can have a tremendously negative impact on the ecosystem. I know the cat people don't like to talk about it, but just research this a few times and you'll know what I'm on about. All right, what else is happening? NASA's Perseverance Mars rover extracts first oxygen from Red Planet. This is not the biggest news. I mean, think about how cool these developments are, that this is not the coolest news yet. I mean, fun times. The growing list of firsts for Perseverance, NASA's newest six-wheel robot on the Martian surface, includes converting some of the Red Planet's thin carbon dioxide-rich atmosphere into oxygen. A toaster-sized experimental instrument aboard Perseverance called the Mars Oxygen In-Situ Resource Utilization Experiment, or MOXIE, oh, that's adorable, accomplished the task. The test took place April 20th, the 60th Martian day or so since the mission landed in February 18th. on the February 18th, I mean. While the technology demonstration is just getting started, it could pave the way for science fiction to become science fact. Isolating and storing oxygen on Mars to help power rockets that could lift astronauts off the planet's surface. Such devices also might one day provide breathable air for astronauts themselves. MOXIE is an exploration technology investigation, as is the Mars Environmental Dynamics Analyzer, or MEDA, weather station, and is sponsored by NASA's Space Technology Mission Directorate and Human Exploration and Operations Missions Directorate. That's a lot of words. This is a critical first step at converting carbon dioxide to oxygen on Mars, said Jim Reuter, Associate Administrator of STMD. MOXIE has more work to do, but the results from this technology demonstration are full of promise as we move towards our goal of one day seeing humans on Mars. Oxygen isn't just the stuff we breathe, of course. Rocket propellant depends on oxygen, and the future explorers will depend on producing propellant on Mars to make their trip home. So the amount of oxygen that, you know, so far has been generated is not that high. I think it was some grams, but that's still incredible. I mean, overall, over a large amount of time, like if, let's say you have like 1,000 of these little devices, and maybe they're even scaled up, maybe they're not so little. That's going to be pretty incredible. To finally have like some source of oxygen natively there. It's pretty incredible. Lyrid meteor shower. Sky watchers set for sunrise or sunset view on Thursday. So that's basically today. That's really cool. I mean, unfortunately, I have missed the last 6 years worth of meteor showers because there's just not enough dark skies here in Germany. And you really have to travel quite far. And that's not always practical during this time. Sky gazers will be able to see the Lyrid meteor shower on Thursday morning, with up to 18 meteors per hour expected to light up UK skies. So this is probably a Northern Europe thing. The shower is due to peak at 13 BST on 22nd April, but astronomers say the best time to view it will be early morning or after sunset. Meteor showers or shooting stars are caused when pieces of debris known as meteorites enter the Earth's atmosphere. Oh man. This takes me back because there was so many nights in the Himalayas when I was out with friends chasing meteors, trying to take pictures and just having a good time. It's much harder to do here in Germany, though, because it's just so rare that you find a good place to be able to see the stuff that isn't just polluted with airplanes. Because most of what I was able to capture as a photographer here were, you know, contrails and jet lights and stuff. They leave tremendous patterns all over the sky. I mean, I'm in there mostly for the photography, but it is a truly out-of-the-world experience to, you know, sit through a meteor shower because you can see some of this stuff, I mean, theoretically, has been traveling since the birth of the universe and just takes that moment when you're looking up into the sky to blow up into thousands of little pieces and leave a glow. That's incredible stuff if you really stop and think about it. It's pretty deep. We cannot drink oil, campaigners condemn East African pipeline. Activists say that the Heart of Africa line shipping crude from Uganda to Tanzania is unnecessary and poses a huge environmental risk. Activists have accused French and Chinese oil firms of ignoring huge environmental risks after the signing of accords on the controversial construction of a $2.5 billion pipeline. China must shut 600 coal-fired plants to hit climate target. The move towards renewables to hit net zero by 2060 will also pay off its saving of $1.6 trillion. Analysis finds China must shut down nearly 600 of its coal-fired plants in the next 10 years, replacing them with renewable electricity generation. Well, Elon Musk is of the opinion that the Chinese authorities are really quite radical in a good way, ironically, in this dimension. And they're, you know, taking all necessary steps to do really, you know, they're really trying to fast track the bureaucracy on how quickly things have to change to, you know, green technologies. And that's at least a good sign for the entire world. But of course, one cannot simply ignore all the other stuff that's been going on in China. Let's see what else is going on. So €500,000 is set aside to save Rome's pine trees from a deadly parasite. A president of surrounding Lazio region says pine tortoise scale problem requires immediate action. The battle is on to save Rome's umbrella pine trees, as much a part of the landscape of the Italian capital as its ancient monuments, from a deadly parasite. That is quite important. An end to cigarettes? New Zealand aims to create smoke-free generation. I think collectively, cigarettes and alcohol are the two most dangerous substances on the planet. I mean, in contrast, probably, and this is, I'm making this stuff, the numbers up, but I think you'll agree with me. I think more people have died from a combination of cigarettes, you know, and alcohol than have died from radiation. I'm not sure if that's true. And I'm pretty happy that New Zealand has been taking these steps. I mean, I was a chain smoker for a couple of years, and I guess that if it's just, you know, so readily available, people are going to smoke. I think alcohol and tobacco should, like, both of, like, and alcohol, tobacco, and the products that are derivatives of the two, they should be taxed so fucking heavily that it is impossible to afford them. They should be legal, but they should just be unbelievably taxed. You really fucking have to have that cigarette in order to be able to, you know, justify the cost. Okay, Spain's Endesa power firm sued over electrocution of birds. A landmark case says thousands of birds, including endangered eagles, die needlessly each year in Leonard Cohen's famous song. A bird on a wire is a symbol of freedom, but for thousands of birds, it is the equivalent of being sent to the electric chair. That's pretty interesting. I mean, I really appreciate the work that animal activists do to preserve these species. I mean, this is really important work, and I'm so glad that people are doing this. In a landmark case, a Spanish electricity company is being prosecuted over the deaths of hundreds of birds electrocuted on pylons and overhead cables and for failing to comply with regulations designed to protect wildlife. After a three-year investigation, Antoni Pellegrin, the Attorney General for the Environment in Barcelona, has brought a case for ecological crimes against the electric company Endesa and six of its senior executives for allegedly failing to meet safety requirements. Well, I hope that justice prevails in this case. You know, it's so difficult for us to analyze the impact that we're having on the environment, but it really shouldn't be. And that should really be our first concern. And I realize that this probably sounds hypothetical. You know, I'm sitting here broadcasting from a comfortable apartment where the heat is on, but that's the kind of the message. I mean, just because human comfort is valuable, it doesn't mean that the comfort and the lives of every other species around us has to suffer as a consequence. And the very least that large corporations can do is comply with environmental regulations. So that seems like a no-brainer. Okay, Chinese firms prepare to charge into Europe's electric car market. Tesla could be in for a shock as Far Eastern rivals use cheap money to gain traction among affluent Western car buyers. Tesla boss Elon Musk is not known for admiring his competition, but when Chinese manufacturer NIO made its 100,000th electric car last week, he offered his congratulations. I'm interested to see what this does with the world of automotive engineering. Because so far, the Chinese have not been known to make amazing cars. And the fact that, you know, Chinese cars would now penetrate the European market, that's going to be really interesting to see what happens. I mean, on the one hand, definitely, you know, people in Europe, in the European Commission, appreciate the fact that, you know, they're all in towards electric vehicles and they're supporting it and there are grants and there are various provisions for the entry of electric vehicles into the market and encouragements for the buyers. But at the same time, countries like Germany, you know, one of the primary things that Germany does is automotive engineering. They're the world's leaders in automotive engineering. And how does that market react to Chinese electric cars? What is the impact on the economy of Germany with this sort of influx? That's going to be interesting. I have to say it's going to be super interesting what happens in the near future as a consequence of this. Okay, and now the big news. NASA's Mars helicopter in first powered controlled flight on another planet. This is the news that I've been waiting for from a very long time. This has been long overdue. I think the most significant thing that has happened in space research in a long time is this bit of news. NASA is celebrating its first powered controlled flight on another planet after its Ingenuity helicopter rose into the Martian sky, hovered for a moment, then gently returned to the dusty surface. If that doesn't blow your mind, let me continue. The robotic craft climbed to an altitude of about 3 meters on its maiden flight on Monday morning, having hitched a ride to Mars with NASA's Perseverance rover, which touched down in February on a mission to search for signs of life. The craft is part of a technology demonstration, a project that aims to test a new capability for the first time. Manish Patel, head of space instrumentation at the Open University, said the flight was a glimpse into the future of Mars missions. "This is an astounding feat of engineering excellence that paves the way to a brave new world of science and exploration possibilities. We have explored the orbit of Mars, the surface of Mars, and now NASA have conquered the atmosphere. This is one small flight for ingenuity, but one giant leap for Mars exploration," he added. One of the reasons why this is such a significant event is because it's not like Mars is a place where you just have GPS. I mean, drones are ridiculously common on our planet now, right? That's just the way things are in this part of the 21st century. They're everywhere. You can fly a drone practically everywhere as long as it's not in a military zone or whatever. And then you have geofencing restrictions, but I digress. The fact that drones are able to conquer the planet Earth so rapidly is in large part to do with GPS technology. The reason why that is true is because drones have GPS chips on board, which allow them to communicate with multiple satellites, and that way they are able to position themselves in space. They know they're not getting drifted. If there is a 20 kilometer an hour wind, they know to compensate for that automatically. And that's why, you know, modern day drones from companies such as DJI are so brilliant. But when you're on Mars, the atmosphere is completely different. You know, the fact that satellite navigation isn't as practical as it is here on Earth, that is a game changer. And the fact that it's not like you can just control via a remote control, because the latency between when a signal is sent from Earth, you know, all the way to Mars and received there and an action is made, that's too high. So a controlled flight is not possible. There's no technology in the world that can do that right now, unless somebody goes out and invents a wormhole. But that's the reality of the situation. So the fact that so many of challenges like this have been overcome. So first of all, we've transported a helicopter to another goddamn planet. If that doesn't blow your mind already, you've made some wrong decisions in your life. And the fact then that they're able to take off remotely and they're able to have a controlled, sustained flight. Of course, this is not the world's most exciting flight from, you know, purely the telemetry. It's just a simple hover and a touchdown. But the fact that a safe flight has been conducted, there's going to be tens of these and then hundreds of these and then tens of thousands of these. And maybe in a decade, maybe in two decades, we will have the technology to remotely access other worlds that we just have not been able to do right now, because it's just too dangerous to send humans there. We can very easily send rovers like, you know, this Mars helicopter, and they can discover and bring new discoveries and new inventions back home. And it's just such a great way to explore the solar system to get started. And potentially, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but exoplanets. Man, that's going to be such an exciting future. All right, well, you can see that I'm a bit dreamy-eyed about all this, but I guess one should be. All right, thank you so very much for your time and attention. Until next time, ciao.